All right, Matt. So did you know that dogs can bark upwards of 500 times per day?
No.
Yeah, it's just a rough estimate.
Why didn't I see that one coming?
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the graveyard. Thank you for joining us tonight. My name is Adam.
And my name's Matt.
Now, pull up a tombstone or settle into your casket and get comfortable, because this is Graveyard Tales. All right, everybody, here we are again. Matt, how you doing tonight, brother?
I'm doing okay.
Good.
So you've
good.
Already said it. Now I'm thinking about it. It's a little off today.
Yeah, right.
You know,
right. To break the fourth wall a little bit for you guys, Matt and I were just sitting here thinking, it feels off. Like I told Matt right before I hit record, I said, let's see how badly I do this tonight. So I'm already expecting to not do that great. So y'all cut me some slack here. But
yeah,
I think it's because we're recording on a different night than normal and our routine's broken a little bit. Things just are off. But we're here. We're doing it.
That's right.
So
we're like the mail.
Yeah, exactly. As we always say, go over to patreon.com/graveyardtales. Sign up to become a patron. You can find three different levels there of patronage. We think any level that you sign up for is going to be a good deal. It's worth your money because all the levels get a bonus episode a week, and they are shorter versions, basically, of Graveyard Tales topics. So usually in the same vein as Graveyard Tales, but not enough information to do a full hour and a half episode on. Then if you move up to our $5, you get that. Plus, you get the ad-free audio and video versions of the episode. If we have an ad that week, our $5 will get the ad-free audio and video versions. But if you go to the $10, you get all of that. Plus, you get our second show, SideQuest. And SideQuest is, I guess the best way to describe it is, you're just hanging out with me and Matt. Because yeah. we're not doing anything Graveyard Tales related. It's just random stuff. Sometimes I tell Matt a historical story. Sometimes I tell him a survival story. Matt likes to make me look dumb by playing trivia games. And like, you know, I will get his back on this. He's not trying to make me look dumb. It just happens because I'm dumb. So he'll find the questions that I do not know. And those are the questions. But we're also, you know, always trying to make the other one laugh or freak the other one out or something. So yep. If that sounds like something you would enjoy, then sign up to become a $10 patron. Also, go check out our sponsors. If we have a sponsor in the ad, we will have the link and the code and stuff down in the show notes. So go check it out. You can help us out by using their service or buying one of their products using our code. And they know, hey, you heard about us on Graveyard Tales. And so they will sponsor another episode of Graveyard Tales. So on that note, Matt, why don't you tell us, what are we talking about tonight, brother?
All right. So tonight, we're headed to one of the creepiest old medical buildings in Texas. We're going to the legendary White Sanitarium. And yes, if you've never heard of it before, don't worry. By the end of this story, you're probably going to understand why generations of Wichita Falls teenagers treated this place like the haunted house equivalent of a rite of passage. Okay. Mm-hmm. The building has everything you want in a ghost story. It's an abandoned hospital, which we know they are always haunted as all get out. They had experimental medical procedures there. People have seen shadowy figures wandering in the hallways. Lights flicker even though the building has not had electricity. Okay? And my personal favorite, ghosts smoking cigarettes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
we've had a couple of those stories and I love them every time.
Look, I mean, even in the afterlife, you still can't quit. Man, yeah. It's brutal.
Well, they got a hold on you, man.
So tonight we're going to explore the history, the legends, the paranormal investigations, and the strange events connected to this old Texas sanitarium. And along the way, you can decide for yourself if this place was genuinely haunted or if it's just an old building with a lot of history and a lot of imagination stuck right to it. So Adam, start us off talking about the White Sanitarium.
All right. So as we always say, go check our sources down at the bottom of the show notes. You can find where we found all the information and you can make sure we're not lying to you. If we talk about it, we have sourced and referenced it down in the bottom of the show notes. And the White Sanitarium in Wichita Falls, Texas, opened in 1926 as a small private mental hospital run by Dr. Frank S. White. And it operated under various owners until it closed in the 1950s, later becoming famous locally as the, quote, old insane asylum and a reputedly haunted site. So, in the mid-1920s, psychiatrist Frank S. White left his position as superintendent of the Austin State Hospital, and he decided to create a more, quote, home-like, deinstitutionalized setting for mentally ill patients. Now, around 1926, he opened the White Sanitarium at the corner of California and Olin in South Wichita Falls, and it was a cream-colored, stucco, Spanish-style building with a red tile roof designed to look more like a residence than the prison-like institutions you would see in other parts of the country. So it, to me, that almost makes it creepier nowadays when you think about it versus the more sterile psychiatric hospital look. I don't know why.
Oh, I agree. You know, it looks more like a house than it does. That there is a creepier aspect to it.
Yeah, there's something about it that messes with you. The White Sanitarium combined a, quote, progressive home-like care. So fresh air, activities, rest, with some of the harshest mid-20th century psychiatric and TB era medical practices. Now, the facility was intended as a private institution for people with mental illness, emphasizing recreation and a calmer domestic environment rather than the harsh custodial feel of state asylums. And Dr. White's stated goal was, like I said, to deinstitutionalize care by housing patients in a residence-like setting with comfortable rooms, access to a library, and opportunities for recreation, like games and reading, rather than just these bare, sterile wards. And patients were encouraged to spend time outdoors in the North Texas sun and air, reflecting the prevailing ideas that rest, clean air, and a calm home-like environment could improve both tuberculosis and mental health conditions. But there were hidden evils inside the White Sanitarium.
Oh, of course.
All while the outside looked like a bright, happy home. And we've talked many times about the horrors of early sanitarium treatments. And it seems like all of them were testing grounds for new medical practices and stuff. So let's look at some of those that were performed at the White Sanitarium. So one of the things they did at the White Sanitarium was electroshock or electroconvulsive therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, we have talked about it in several other sanitarium places. But the sanitarium made frequent use of this electroshock therapy on patients who were severely depressed, psychotic, or acting out in line with psychiatric practice from the 1930s to the 1950s. And electroshock at the time induced controlled seizures in an attempt to relieve symptoms, but many patients were left traumatized with possible cardiac or brain complications and profound confusion or memory loss afterward.
You know, and what's so crazy about ECV is it worked to a degree. I mean, there were patients that actually benefited from it. But just like with a lot of things, people look at it as like, well, if a little is good, then a lot must be way better. And that wasn't the case at all. I mean, there was a set amount of patients that really benefited for specific diagnoses, in a controlled, regulated environment. But you know, it was used more as a panacea, as a cure-all, and it didn't do that. And of course, they keep going, oh well, it's not helping this gentleman. Let's crank it up.
Yeah, right.
That's not the way it needs to work. That's why people developed, you know, heart conditions and you know, brain trauma, because they were getting too many volts run through them.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of those things that if a little bit didn't do it, then try something else. Not if a little bit didn't do it, well, we need a whole lot of bit. No.
Yeah. That was just not the way it was going to work.
Right. Right. Now they also performed lobotomies and other invasive procedures there. So accounts of the facility's darker history emphasize that some patients, particularly those considered chronic or unmanageable, were subjected to lobotomies, in which holes were drilled into the skull and frontal brain tissue was disrupted. As with lobotomy practices nationwide, many of these patients emerged with severe cognitive and emotional blunting, they say. They were unable to function independently, and a significant number later died by suicide or from medical complications. Uh-huh. And the thing with lobotomies, it's like they did stop some mental illnesses because they put the patients into basically vegetative states. So, yes, the patient wasn't having outbursts and stuff anymore, but the patient wasn't doing much of anything anymore. So kind of like the electroshock, they saw it as, oh, it must be doing something, but not the right thing. So they did a lot of lobotomies on people, and it wasn't one of those things where you made it off the operating table every time. If they did a lobotomy, some of the people died on the operating table. Some of the people died shortly afterward due to complications. The ones that didn't and actually made it were in a vegetative state, just kind of sitting around. You can see it a lot in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. That movie, you see people just sitting. Mm-hmm. And that's, I mean, lobotomy patients there. Now, the TB sanatorium care, there are some historical recollections that insist the building functioned primarily as a sanatorium for tuberculosis patients who were given private or semi-private rooms, rest, cures, and reading material while isolated from the general population. Now, this meant long periods of bed rest, strict routines, and limited contact with the outside world, which for dual diagnosis, so that would be TB plus mental illness, patients could blur into a custodial, almost carceral experience, despite the pleasant architecture. Mm-hmm. So if you had a mental illness and you also came down with TB, They basically just put you in solitary confinement is what it was. You just, yeah, you were in a fairly decent looking room and building, but you were stuck on bed rest and.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, completely separated from, you know, other patients, you know, probably most of the staff other than the staff that had to directly care for you. So imagine what that would do to your mind, you know, at dealing with the fact that you're there and, you know, you're dealing with treatment for whatever illness you have on top of being completely isolated and separated from everyone else because of TB.
Right.
I mean, it was just, it's a recipe for misery. That's all I can say.
For sure. Yeah, for sure. Now, while specific charts from White Sanitarium are not publicly available, facilities using electroshock and lobotomies in this era commonly also used physical restraints, locked rooms, and sedation to manage agitation, and local recollections of the, quote, insane asylum reputation are consistent with that pattern. So we don't have specific charts or anything from White Sanitarium that say, yeah, we restrained patients, we sedated them and locked them in rooms. But the testimonies from people in the area, maybe who worked there or had family members there, say they did do that.
Mm-hmm.
And why not? I mean, if they're doing lobotomies and stuff on people, sedating them with drugs or tying them down to a bed doesn't seem like a far stretch to me.
Mm-hmm.
But the stark contrast between Dr. White's expressed vision of a gentle restorative refuge and the reality of the invasive brain surgery and shock treatments is a key reason the building's history now reads as both humane for its time and deeply disturbing in retrospect, feeding into the haunted reputation that it has. The interior layout, it was two open wards. It had minimal permanent partitioning, one bathroom per floor, and one kitchen on the first floor. They suggest a modest census, probably a few dozen patients at any one time, not anywhere close to state hospital scale in the hundreds or the thousands in other parts of the state and the country. But contemporary small sanatorium with similar square footage and open wards often housed on the order of 15 to 30 patients, sometimes up to maybe 40 if beds were packed more tightly. The Wichita Falls City flashback post about a different 16-bed hospital in town, and it gives a sense of how small private institutions of that era could be. So this wasn't like one of the ones we've talked about before where, oh, it's supposed to house 1,000 patients, but we crammed 15,000 in here.
Yeah, right.
You know, this was a small 30, 40 patient institution, but I would assume, like any place like this during this time, it held more than 40, but it didn't get up to the numbers that we normally saw.
And those places were a lot bigger too.
Right. One recollection from someone who later lived there as an apartment resident states that its original life, it operated as a sanatorium for tuberculosis patients until drug cures made such facilities obsolete. Mm-hmm. And then it sat empty for years.
Mm-hmm.
There's another local account that mentions that in busy years, a small hospital with only a few dozen beds could still treat several hundred individuals over time because patients were discharged, transferred, or died, and it would free up beds for new admissions.
Adam, you know, there's always something that I want to get better at. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter whether it's cooking, whether it's, you know, fixing stuff at the house.
Thinking.
Thinking, vocabulary, you name it. I mean, there's always something I'm thinking, well, I could do better at that. And for me, that's where Masterclass comes in.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I can go on Masterclass and find a class taught by someone who's actually the best in the world at this. And I can say, well, I can take their advice and do a little bit better myself. And it's so cool because it fits into my regular life. I drive most of the day with my regular job, and I can use just the audio in audio mode, and I can listen to short lessons right on my phone, and I don't have to carve out hours of time. I just have to go and go, this is what I want, and bam, and I'm in a masterclass.
Yep, that's true. And I did that with Texas barbecue. There's a Texas barbecue class. I learned how to make ribs better. I thought, I'm a born and bred Texan. I know how to barbecue. I could get better. And trust me, I did with Masterclass. And unlike other learning platforms, Masterclass puts you in the room with the people who defined their fields. Not just experts, but the best in the world, like Matt said. Business, writing, cooking, creativity, wellness, and more, with plans starting at just $10 a month billed annually. And there's audio mode, like Matt was mentioning, so it turns your commute or your workout into a classroom. You download lessons for offline access, which helps when you're on a road trip, so you don't not sitting there spinning trying to get service if you're driving through who knows where, Arkansas.
I've been there.
I go there a lot, sadly. Every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you're not happy with it, you can get your money back, but I promise you're going to be happy with it. Masterclass keeps adding new classes, and there's never been a better time to get in. So right now, as a listener of Graveyard Tales, you get at least 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/graveyard, G-R-A-V-E-Y-A-R-D.
Yeah, that's 15% off at masterclass.com/graveyard. Just head to masterclass.com/graveyard to see their latest offer.
There's no specific historical document showing that the White Sanatorium was overcrowded in the way other large state institutions were that we've talked about. But regionally, the nearby Wichita Falls State Hospital ran close to its 2485 patient capacity in the mid 20th century. So that kind of shows that there were pressures put on these mental health facilities. And given the pressure and the small, flexible, open ward design, it's reasonable to say that the White Sanatorium operated close to however many beds they could physically fit on those two floors. So they likely had a full ward the entire time that they operated. Now, Dr. White reportedly only ran the sanatorium for about 5 years before illness forced him to retire, after which other operators continued to use the building as a small hospital through the following decades. And the institution stayed in operation under successive owners until sometime in the mid-1950s or so, when a major storm and heavy flooding in the area damaged the structure and then contributed to its closure. So after closing, the building sat vacant and deteriorating on the south edge of town, and locals then began referring to it simply as the Old Insane Asylum or Dr. White Sanatorium. And it's the isolated location of it and the empty floors, the broken windows and all that drew teenagers, urban explorers, vandals, and then paranormal groups, which Matt will talk about. And it cemented its reputation as one of Wichita Falls' primary spooky landmarks. Well, today, the White Sanatorium is private property and used as a residence or apartment, not as a hospital or public haunted attraction. The main building at 508 Olin Street has been renovated inside, and one detailed local account describes it as having been restored and converted into living spaces with multiple bedrooms, baths, kitchen, and a large open lower floor. Reviews from the locals emphasize that it has never been a formal tourist attraction, but you can drive by and take pictures from the street. But be advised that there are no trespassing signs and there are no regular tours or ghost hunt events available. The building has received preservation recognition from local historical groups, and current owners focus on maintaining the old structure while dealing with the constant attention from curious paranormal fans.
Yeah, so be courteous to the fact that this is not like other haunted hospitals. Like, you know, amazingly enough, we have the old South Pittsburgh Hospital here, which exists for that now.
Which is fantastic. Yeah,
I mean, it's just one weekend of paranormal investigation after another. This is not that. You know, there's people that actually, you know, are essentially living here. You know, they manage this. So let's be chill. But let's talk about what they might be dealing with, you know, when they're spending time in that old building. So, as Adam said, eventually the sanitarium closed and medical care moved to newer facilities. And, you know, the once busy hospital was left empty for decades. No electricity, no running water, just a large medical building slowly deteriorating in the Texas heat. And, you know, buildings do not, they need people. They do not do well when they are just left abandoned. And abandoned buildings tend to have a strange effect on people, especially old hospitals. They already feel creepy. But you add in peeling paint, broken windows, and long empty hallways, and your imagination begins to work overtime, which is exactly what happened with the White Sanatorium. Yep. I mean, over time, this place became Wichita Falls' most famous haunted location. And as I mentioned in the intro, teenagers would dare one another to go inside. Urban explorers wanted to investigate it, and paranormal stories started multiplying. And so pretty soon, everybody around town, you just knew this, boy, you got to be careful around the old White Sanatorium where there's stuff in there. If you go by at night, something will look out at you.
Yep.
You know, everybody's had a building in their town that had those kind of stories. Well, that was the building in Wichita Falls. Now, let's start with the most famous ghost. Witnesses say the sanitarium is haunted by a mysterious woman dressed entirely in, any guesses?
White.
White.
Ah, it's always white.
I mean, it's like they've got a dress code or something.
I mean, they must.
There's probably 200 women in white ghosts around the world. Probably more.
Oh, yeah, probably more.
But people claim that they have seen her wandering the hallways. Others say that she appears in the windows late at night. So there you go. You drive by at night, look up in the window, see if you see the woman in white.
Yep.
Drivers passing by have reported seeing a pale figure standing silently inside the building, just staring out, which that's unsettling enough. But imagine driving by an abandoned hospital at night and suddenly seeing someone in the window. That's the kind of moment where you turn and check the back seat of your car. I mean, you know, that is really creepy. I mean, where I grew up, there was an old road called Sanitarium Road. And, you know, there was an abandoned hospital up at the top of this hill. I mean, we would get freaked out just driving past the sign that said Sanitarium Road.
Sure, yeah.
But the woman in white isn't the only spirit that people claim to have seen. Visitors have reported apparitions of other patients as well. And these figures are usually described as wearing hospital gowns, moving slowly through the halls, appearing confused or distressed. In other words, exactly how you would imagine former asylum patients might appear.
Mm-hmm.
Some witnesses say the apparitions look mentally unstable or disoriented. That's led many locals to believe that there are spirits of patients who died during the experimental treatments that occurred in the sanitarium.
Oh, yeah.
Now,
we know they did.
Yeah.
So
now, skeptics will tell you something important here. If you walk into an abandoned hospital expecting to see ghosts, guess what? You're going to see ghosts. Your brain will fill in the blanks. But still, enough people report seeing figures in those halls, the stories begin to become legendary.
Yeah.
Now,
I think you can only chalk some of it up to you, you making these things appear due to thinking about them. I think after a while, that would go away if it was only that.
I think that if you're a pack of teenagers, if you're doing this on a dare, if you're just trying to creep yourself out a little bit, you're more than likely going to experience something because your senses are heightened. You know, you're afraid. You're constantly looking for anything moving. You're listening for sounds. You know, there's a really good chance because your imagination is working overtime. But for paranormal investigators, people that have gone in and done this stuff with either the mindset of we're hoping to catch some evidence or we're going to debunk the fact that this place is haunted, you would have a tendency to be a little more, I don't know what the word is, just, you know, you're gonna have maybe less bias, at least in my opinion. I realize that if you're filming a TV show there, you absolutely want to catch something. But if you're just a paranormal investigation group and you had the opportunity to, you know, go investigate an abandoned hospital that had stories, you might really want to collect something that is worthwhile, and all the typical bangs and knocks and, you know, cold spots and stuff, you're going to try to explain those away. So those people still had some really, really unique experiences there.
Yep.
So
yeah, I was going to say the skeptics that go there and have something happen, that kind of takes away from the, oh, it's all you wanting to see.
Exactly.
It. These people are wanting to not see it so they can go, I didn't see anything. And then they have an experience.
Yeah. So here's where the story kind of takes a funny turn. Because apparently some of the ghosts in this place were smokers. Now, back in the early 1900s, smoking indoors was completely normal. I mean, I can remember going to the grocery store with my mom and people were smoking, standing in the frozen foods, you know, puffing away.
I remember restaurants.
Oh, restaurants. You know? Restaurants were probably one of the later ones that said, okay, we're going to completely eliminate smoking.
Yeah. Which even when I was a smoker, I found that ridiculous that you had a smoking side and a non-smoking side and there was nothing blocking the two sides.
Right. Yeah, what it,
as if it would just stay.
Yeah, what if you're at the table that's right next to the smoking side, that's still in the non-smoking side, you might as well have been in the smoking side.
Yeah.
I mean, it didn't really make a difference.
The whole building might as well be a smoking section if there's anybody smoking.
Right. Right. That's definitely a sign of the times, you know, things have changed. But an old mental hospital in the early 1900s, everybody smoked. Doctors were smoking while they were treating patients who were probably smoking. Okay. The nurse is checking your blood pressure with a cigarette hanging out of her mouth, you know.
You're a little high today, sweetheart.
Yeah, I mean, doctor smoked, patient smoked. Hospital smelled like a mixture of antiseptic and Lucky Strikes. I mean, it's just the way it was. So patients at the sanitarium often gathered in the recreation rooms to play cards and smoke. So fast forward several decades. The building is abandoned. Again, no electricity, no residents. But visitors begin reporting something strange. They see floating, glowing cigarette tips in the dark.
That's pretty cool.
Now, the smell of smoke we have heard forever at all these places, especially like cigar smoke. But I don't know that I've ever heard of an actual cherry on the end of a cigarette lighting up in the dark.
No.
just hovering in midair, you know, like someone invisible sitting there is taking a drag.
Yeah, we've never talked about that before. That is a first for sure.
What's even weirder, though, is these glowing embers often appear around an old card table. And some witnesses say they've seen shadowy figures sitting there, like it's a ghostly poker game. So it's like,
why not?
I got a pair of deuces, you know, and they're puffing away.
Go fish, Martha. Go fish.
I mean, do ghosts gamble? I mean, do they have ghost money? You know,
and probably not. But they might gamble with other things.
That's right.
You know,
maybe there's a ghost casino somewhere. Which is another place that there's no reason to have a non-smoking section, because the whole place smells like it.
And just the whole casino smells like booze and cigarettes.
And I'm telling you, if the Wheel of Fortune slot machine is in the non-smoking section, you can guarantee that nobody that wants to play those machines is going to care. Okay? I don't know why. Those machines, every time I've ever been to a casino, the Wheel of Fortune machines are always just loaded with, I mean, there's a woman sitting there with an oxygen tank on, you know, puffing away, you know, come on.
Yep.
This machine's not hitting today. Now, one thing we talked about was that where the building sat abandoned for so long, there was no electricity. Okay. But a lot of people have reported seeing lights and no electricity for over 50 years. But people passing by at night would claim that they saw lights glowing in the windows. Now, I'm not talking about the reflection of headlights, which, I mean, I think everybody has experienced that. What was that? Mm-hmm. You know, and it's just headlights from the cars going by. But people have reported seeing rooms illuminated. You can tell the reflection of an outside light against a dark window. But if it's at night, you can really tell that room is lit up. There's a light source in that room.
It's very easy to tell if the light is in or out of the building at
night. Yeah. Hallways being faintly lit. But when investigators went inside, it was total darkness because there was no working electrical system, which leaves us with two possibilities. Either somebody ghostly was paying the electric bill, which if I have to keep paying an electric bill as a ghost, I'm going to be mad.
No kidding.
Or like I said, people were just seeing reflections, headlights, or an illusion of some type. You know, it's just there was light from somewhere outside that was causing it to look like it was illuminated. I think that probably a lot of these accounts are just reflections, but I guarantee you some of them, people what people were seeing looked like the entire room was lit up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, along with no electricity, the sanitarium had no running water. But one particular event occurred in the basement. Visitors exploring the sanitarium claim they heard the sound of running water. Pipes gurgling, water flowing. But the building hadn't had working plumbing in decades. And the pipes were completely disconnected. But people claimed they could hear water moving through the basement. Now, old buildings make all kinds of weird noises. And wind can blow through pipes. Animals can get inside the walls and move around. The structure itself shifts. But when you're standing in a dark, abandoned hospital, your brain doesn't immediately jump to, that was probably a raccoon. Your brain jumps to, yep, that's definitely ghosts. You know, 100%.
Until you said the pipes gurgling, when that you said running water, I was going to say, did you check and make sure there wasn't a stray dog?
Yeah.
Maybe in the corner of the room or something that was
right.
marking its territory? I mean,
yeah, that's right. Yo, was there's running water. Nope, urinating dog.
Yep.
Now, one of the creepiest stories connected to the sanitarium.
Running water? How'd you know my dog's name?
I can't. I have a joke, but I caught myself. I'm not making it. Now, one of the creepiest stories connected to the sanitarium comes from a book titled Phantom of the Plains. And according to the account, two people decided to spend the night inside the building. That's already a questionable decision.
Mm-hmm.
They set up reclining chairs on the lower level, and they talked back and forth for hours. And eventually, they fell asleep. But around midnight, they woke up to footsteps shuffling across the concrete floor. Then they heard something else. Water sloshing around in the basement below. At the time, there was about 6 inches of standing water down there.
Oh, wow.
And the sound continued for several minutes. Then something even stranger happened. From outside the building, they heard a woman calling out over and over and over. Susan! 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 They searched the entire building, inside, outside, but found nothing. No one was there. Just an empty hospital in the middle of the night.
That's weird.
And I mean, if that doesn't really make, you know, the hair stand up on the back of your neck, you're probably already a ghost. I mean, seriously.
Right. The calling out of a specific name is very interesting.
I know that is something that you don't hear very often, you know, and I'm assuming that one of these people in there was not named Susan.
Right. You know, that's what I was, since they didn't say, and my sister's name is Susan, then.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, Susan's boyfriend outside, you know, screaming because he was too scared to come in and get her, you know, want her to come out. Now, in 2008, a group of paranormal investigators decided to explore the sanitarium. They invited a local television reporter from KAUZ Channel 6 to document the investigation. The team brought EVP recorders, video cameras, audio equipment, and various paranormal gadgets. Basically, they had everything except proton packs. I mean, they were ready. But something strange happened almost immediately. Within minutes of entering the building, their electronics started to fail. Cameras lost power, recorders shut off, batteries were drained. And now paranormal investigators often claim that spirits can drain energy from electronics. And skeptics argue that old batteries and humidity and faulty equipment are much more likely explanations. But the investigators pressed on. And on this, this is one of those phenomenon that it always kills me when skeptics are going, it's old batteries. It's, you know, humidity. That happens so frequently that paranormal investigators, they make sure they have fresh batteries in everything right. they bring.
Right. That's what I was going to say.
They have backup batteries. Everything mm-hmm. has a full charge. The backups have a full charge.
Yep. And when's the last time you were using your phone outside on a humid day and went, it's draining fast. Yeah. Must be the humidity.
Right. Right. That doesn't happen any other time.
No. Maybe old batteries, like from the first gen batteries
yeah.
that were ever made, would be affected by humidity.
Or, yeah.
I mean, because I remember people saying, put your batteries in the freezer to make them last longer. And it's like, that's not applicable anymore.
Right.
Just
right.
like humidity is not applicable to battery drain anymore. It's 2026
yeah.
that my battery's fine in the humidity.
And even when this occurred in 2008, battery technology was way
yeah.
better.
Yeah.
Unless you're using like, you know, Joe's batteries, you know, that you bought mm-hmm. at the bodega.
Yeah.
You know, no. I mean, if you're using, you know, Duracells or Energizers or whatever, which mm-hmm. I'm sure most of these people are going to do because they know this is a possibility. And yep. they know if it happens and they document it, somebody's going to go, hey, you should have brought better batteries.
Mm-hmm.
We did. This does not happen routinely except in these type of situations.
Right. It's not a common thing with every location you go
exactly.
in.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's like, well, I was in the supermarket yesterday and my battery just drained, you know,
Really?
I mean, no, it doesn't. If it's not a common occurrence worldwide throughout every location you go into, humid or not, then you can't tell me it's that. There is something else going on. I don't know if it's necessarily ghosts trying to pull energy from the battery
yeah.
or if something else is happening, but this is not it's just a battery. This is what those wacky batteries
yeah.
do.
And why would all of them do it?
Right. Right.
I mean, you've got probably, you know, four or five recorders, you know, half a dozen cameras, you know, cell phones, whatever.
You got the one pack that had all bum batteries
yeah,
in it?
Yeah, for everything across the mm-hmm. board, all the lithium batteries that are powering
the
rechargeables.
Triples,
I mean,
yep.
no. No, I don't buy it at all. Something yeah. happens. I'm not saying it's a ghost, but
right,
something
right.
weird happens.
There's something paranormal outside
yeah.
of the normal is happening.
Yeah. So even with this, the investigators pushed on and they conducted EVP sessions in the living room and the library, areas where patients were most likely to have spent a lot of time. And during one session, everyone present heard the voice of a young girl, clear as day. But when they checked the recordings, the voice wasn't there. Except later, when it suddenly appeared in an EVP.
Oh, wow.
Which is the kind of things that keeps paranormal investigators coming back. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know, look at this. We got to go back. We gotta ask more questions. We gotta have more recorders. We gotta have fresh batteries. You know, all of
yeah,
that
fresher
stuff.
Battery.
Yeah. I mean, when you catch something like this, it's like hitting that perfect golf shot. Okay. I'm back, baby. And
mm-hmm.
you know, and then you're like 470 over par for the next 6 years. You know,
right.
but that one shot, it kept me going. Now, another strange event that happened during an EVP session upstairs, while investigators were recording in one of the bedrooms, the temperature of the room dropped dramatically. I don't mean like it just got a little cooler. The temperature became really, really cold, extremely cold, cold enough that the investigators eventually left. Now, believers say that cold spots occur when spirits draw energy from the environment. Skeptics say that old buildings have drafts. But either way, none of the investigators wanted to hang out in that room. It was cold enough to become uncomfortable. And I mean, you know, yeah, there's drafts in old buildings and things like that. Of course there are. But yeah. Have you ever experienced a draft somewhere like that, that you thought, man, I got to get out of here. This is really bothering me.
Certainly not in North Texas.
No, you're right. You're exactly right.
I live in North Texas. I mean,
you know, it's just not going to happen that way.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for years, as I said, the sanitarium was just a magnet for thrill seekers. But in 2002, the building was purchased by Gilbert Rios for about $15,000, which, you know, that's a bargain for a historic property. But his goal was to restore the building and turn it into apartments. And that's what happened. So the sanitarium was renovated, fresh paint, landscaping, modern living spaces. And so today the building is once again home to the living. But I would imagine when the new tenants moved in, someone says, hey, do you know this place used to be a haunted asylum? And everybody sleeps with the lights on, you know, because you're like, what?
Yeah, right.
You know, I can't imagine that if you were from the Wichita Falls area, you didn't already know that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You would sure have to be, everybody you did. Would have to be new to town. to mm-hmm. be like, oh, this new apartment is just lovely, you know. And then, you know, about yeah. that time you bring in the last piece of furniture, so he goes, oh yeah, by the way.
Yeah, so we didn't tell you this before, but
now, even after the renovation, the building's haunted reputation hasn't gone away. Ownership eventually passed to new investors, including Aubrey Gelada. I'm probably saying that completely wrong, so I apologize, Aubrey.
I like that as a dessert.
Gelada?
A bowl of gelada? Uh-huh. Maybe it's gelato. I don't know.
Could Something. Be. But the locals in Wichita Falls will still tell stories about the strange events that happened there over the years. Now, others believe that the ghosts are gone. With the renovations and people moving in, and it become more of a living space, than the ghost moved on. But some people believe they're still around, just quietly coexisting with the living. Maybe they're still having that Tuesday night poker game, or just wandering mm-hmm. the halls, or looking out of windows at night. So, is the White Sanitarium actually haunted? Maybe. Or maybe it's just an old building with a long and complicated history. Places like this tend to collect these stories, and over time, the stories become legends. But one thing's for certain, for decades, that old hospital captured the imagination of Wichita Falls. And, you know, somewhere out there, someone driving past that building may glance up at the windows and swear they see a ghost standing in a window. Or,
right.
Maybe they catch a glowing cigarette floating in the dark. But what do you guys think? I'm sure we've got plenty of listeners that are around the Wichita Falls area in North Texas, and you've probably heard the stories. And sometimes with places like this, the stories begin to fade away as a building is renovated and it's used by the living. It doesn't sit abandoned and, you know, with nature taking mm-hmm. it back over. Sometimes they begin to fade out a little bit, but I guarantee you there are still people there that know what that building yeah. used to mean. And, you know, whether it's haunted or not, it's kind of like the Tulpa situation. You know, Could everybody believe that this old abandoned building was haunted enough to make stuff actually happen in there?
Possibly.
I mean, I think weirder things have happened. You know, you get the yep. collective consciousness all believing that old hospital building, you know, in town is it's full of ghosts, the ghosts of past, you know, mental patients. I mean,
well, as Dave Grohl said, stranger things have happened. I know we've seen some weird stuff happen. People believing that building is haunted and creating a haunting is not that far-fetched.
I don't think so either.
What was the experiment that they did with the table levitating and stuff? They wrote the whole backstory, contacted this supposed spirit, and the table levitated and all that stuff. I forgot the name of the
experiment. I know. Are you talking about the one that was like in the 20s or something? Or are you talking about something modern?
No, it was more modern, I think. But I can't think of the name, but they wrote a whole backstory for this supposed ghost and had people.
I know what you're talking about, but I can't think of what the people involved were. I can't think of the name of the.
That's my problem. But they created that ghost. It wasn't legit.
Yeah,
but
right.
They were having interactions with this ghost.
Oh, I'm gonna have to look that up later because I remember we talked about that story.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I can see that happening at a place like this.
100%.
Where enough people believe it and it creates the activity.
Yeah. 100%. And I think had it stayed abandoned and possibly even turned into a place where more investigations could have occurred. It's fascinating to me that the few documented investigations that did occur in the early 2000s brought about, you know, some pretty amazing evidence, you know, in the form of, you know, EVPs and just some of the investigators' experiences. So I think there's a good chance that if we were seeing investigations on into the 2010s and even into the 2020s, we might have managed to collect some more quality evidence.
Right.
But, you know, I don't want anybody showing up at my house with, you know, cameras and a EVP recorder, you know, so
no.
These people don't either. So when it stops,
and we're not doing this episode to make y'all go out and do that. We're saying don't go do that to the old white sanatorium and try to investigate. Their people live there. Respect their privacy.
But I really did think that I would have gotten some stories from current residents, and I did not find any of that.
Yeah, I'm shocked that you didn't.
You know, that you know, people would be like, man, the water turned on, lights flicker, you know, you hear things at night, just those kind of things, you know, doors opening and closing, you know, those typical things when the living are interacting with, you know, the spirit world in a residence. I didn't find anything like that, which, you know, is pretty, I don't know, maybe that's pretty telling, but I don't know. But what do you guys think?
Know, maybe.
Let us know. And the best place to do that is in our Facebook group. Just go search Graveyard Tales. You will find it. It's called The Graveyard. We have thousands of people in there sharing stories, personal experiences, jokes, you name it. It's a safe place. We just all love to hear these stories. Don't forget to check out our website, which is graveyardpodcast.com. And there you can find links to purchase Graveyard Tales merchandise. You can listen to the show and you can become a patron. And thank you to everyone who has donated their hard-earned money to the work that Adam and I do. We sincerely appreciate it. It helps us keep right on going. Yep. So until next time, we'll save you a seat in the graveyard.
See you soon.